Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello, and welcome to Republic Forces Radio Network, discussing all things Clone Wars, or in this case, all things Young Jedi. I'm Arnie, co-host of Star Wars Action News, hosting this arc. And joining me this time is Jonathan.
Hey everyone, on the Pegs reporter Jonathan, looking forward to talking some Young Jedi tonight.
Barrent.
Hey everybody, it's Barrent, Master Collect Them All from the forums, your Swan Holocron Enhancer.
And Jen.
Hey everybody, I'm back after a bit of a hiatus, but it's good to be back on the show.
And we're glad everything is back on for you power-wise and hurricane-wise. Glad that everything worked out and you're able to join us to talk Young Jedi. Now, this arc kind of came about a little bit hectic. Clone Wars Cartoon Network has been shifting their schedule around, and initially they were just going to do a one-off episode of The Gathering and save the other three for later. Now they're doing this entire arc. And there had been a little bit of confusion, at least on the Star Wars Action News forums at this point. But yes, this was the secret thing for kids and their parents that someone smuggled me into at Celebration 6. It was these four episodes of Young Jedi, all focusing on this new group of Padawans that was shown there, and that Dave Filoni said, "We hope you'll get to see it at some point in time." And he acted very much like he wasn't sure when we would get to see this. And one big difference between Celebration and now is when this aired on Cartoon Network, we started with the very familiar yellow The Clone Wars that fades off into the starfield. But at Celebration, it was actually green and just said Young Jedi and faded out. And so I know that there was some confusion, especially on my part, whether this was going to be an entire new TV series, an addition to The Clone Wars, a replacement for The Clone Wars. But now, for whatever reason, here it is just the second full arc of the season.
Well, it's interesting, Arnie, because I found myself wondering while watching this episode, and I don't have the knowledge that you have of how this arc concludes, but I did find myself wondering, with all the other announcements over this past week about the future of Star Wars, if this could spin off into its own series.
It really does feel like it. I have to say, when I saw this at Celebration, and I'm very interested in getting your guys' opinions as we go through, but seeing it the way I saw it, with the new logo at the beginning and everything, it really felt like it could be a show that focuses on these seven kids, and having Ahsoka almost cameo as their mentor as they go off on these wacky adventures based on this one episode. Now, keep in mind, I was taken into a dark room, not told anything I was going to see, and it just kept going. I thought when we came to what is the end of this episode, the lights would come on, but no, we had another hour of cartoon to watch, and I had no idea what the destination of this would be story-wise, because this is a very self-contained story. I could see why Cartoon Network would want to air it singularly. But let's go through. This is a totally new type of Clone Wars experience, I think, unlike any other episode that's ever aired in the five seasons. So I want to know each of your individual thoughts. Jonathan, let's start with you.
Well, you know, I have to say that I went into this knowing that it wasn't going to be your typical Clone Wars episode. We just came off a really strong arc of what I said last week was sort of the quintessential Clone Wars for me. So this took a departure, but I have to say I still really enjoyed it, and I especially enjoyed it because I watched it with my kids, and it was really the Star Wars for them. It was done completely at their level. There wasn't anything that they had, you know, trouble with that we needed to kind of discuss afterwards. I found it was fun. It wasn't Clone Wars, but it was fun.
Jen, how about you?
I thought it was pretty good. It was kind of like Jonathan was saying. It was at a slightly, I think maybe not necessarily lower, but just intended for a slightly younger group than maybe some of the previous episodes were. But I enjoyed it. It was kind of a breath of fresh air. I'm tired, personally, of Anakin and Obi-Wan charging in and doing stuff every week. So getting to see some new faces and maybe even the chance of having them come back now, since this doesn't sound like it's a one-off, I think it was fun. It was different. I like different.
And Barrett?
I agree with Jed. It was definitely something different. You know, this whole episode had a different feel to it than what I think a Clone Wars episode should bring. You know, when I see a Clone Wars episode, I'm thinking the Clone Wars, shooting and laser beams and stuff like that. And we have gotten episodes where there isn't any of that stuff in there, where it's a lot of intrigue and Senate and stuff like that. But this just felt different. It felt a little more kid-friendly. You know, it helped that it had a cute Wookiee Jedi Padawan in it, but it felt kid-friendly. It felt like something else. So I can see how this could be a spinoff of Ahsoka, who is the teacher, and then having cameos from, like, the quote-unquote real Jedi or the Jedi Council in there. So I liked it. I liked it. It was something different.
And that's something that all three of you mentioned in certain ways, is that this just is such a difference from, say, the last arc we got and what we've come to expect from the Clone Wars with Obi-Wan and Anakin rushing in and having a big battle. This is very different. Now, I've always felt that the Clone Wars storytelling has been rather eclectic. And some episodes you get this outrageous violence and, you know, the infamous scene that was cut from Cartoon Network but put back in on the DVD and Blu-ray of Asajj Ventress impaling a guy and kissing him as he dies. And then you get this virtually the next week after a very strong previous arc. Now, Jonathan and Baron, I look to you guys specifically because I know you're both parents. How would you feel about having your kids watch this of various ages? Do you know well enough in advance, or would the average parent know which episodes are appropriate? Because to me, it does seem like this is aimed at a really young level, the youngest level we've ever seen, even taking into account some of those first season Jar Jar episodes. And we've also seen virtually anything with Darth Maul, I would figure, would be at least 10 and up.
What I typically do when I watch the Clone Wars is I screen it first, and then I let my boys watch it. This time, I kind of knew what we were going into based on what you had said previously, you know, talking about what you saw at C6. And so I let them kind of watch it with me the first time. And this is a really younger than anything we've seen before. Now, I could see the flip side of this. Could you imagine a parent seeing this, you know, turning on going, oh, this is great. This is for the kids. And then the next week we have revenge or something like that. The kids would be in therapy for years.
Well, for me, I don't screen the episodes before Farrah and I watch them. We just watch them. You know, you can pretty much tell from the previews and the commercials from the week before up to the premiere of the episode what kind of episode it's going to be, and you can kind of prepare that. You know, like you said, when Darth Maul's around, there's going to be some killing, you know, and, you know, we just kind of watch it. I just kind of know my son and pretty much what he can handle. I mean, we watch The Walking Dead, so a couple Padawans in danger doesn't faze him.
To both of you as parents, again, is pre-screening a cartoon something that's too work intensive for parents? I would think that most parents, my parents and parents I know, would just feel like this is inappropriate, you're not watching it, versus every week I'm going to watch a show for you to see if you can watch it. Now, a movie is kind of a different experience. I know my sister has gone and seen movies like Harry Potter beforehand and Episode 3 to see if they were appropriate before taking a kid, but those were special event movies that happen once a year versus a weekly TV series.
For me, it was okay since I was watching the shows anyway. Now, my boys always wanted to watch it. It was a lot easier when it was on later Friday nights when the kids might be in bed already. But, you know, I think normally if I wasn't the Star Wars fan I am, I'm not sure if I would have let my 6 and 8 year old. And if you think about how long this show's been on, what? I mean, if this is that they were, what, 2 and 4 when it started. I don't think I would have let them watch this. This isn't the type of show that you know, would have been appropriate for them. Farrah's a little bit older than that, correct?
Oh, he's 8. But I think that children are a little bit more sophisticated nowadays and desensitized when it comes to programming on television. I mean, you know, a PG movie back when we were kids is not what a PG movie is today. I mean, I think a PG movie or PG-13 movie, you can have at least 2 or 3 cuss words in it, you know, as opposed to when we were kids, PG was E.T. in a bicycle basket. So he's 8 years old. He's been around a little bit. I mean, just take your kid to a convention and you'll see a lot more stuff that can traumatize him than The Walking Dead.
Maybe I shelter my children a little bit more, but I can honestly say I haven't let my boys see all of episode 3 yet. Yeah, I understand that media has become a little bit more intense, more graphic, but speaking, and I'm not going to criticize anybody's choices as a parent, but speaking as myself, it's not somewhere I necessarily want to go with my children.
Thank you. And I won't criticize you for sheltering your children either. Kids are going to watch what they want to watch. I know I did. I know if my parents didn't want me to watch something, I would just watch it behind their backs. So instead of having that, I'd rather watch it with my son and discuss it with him and go that route.
No, absolutely. I agree with discussing it with. And I hesitate to use the word shelter, and I certainly don't lie to my kids about anything. I don't, you know, we don't really do those, you know, convenient parental lies about things. But I think, I don't know, getting back to the Clone Wars and what we're talking about, I think that this episode has a lot lighter touch than some of the other episodes. And I think it's maybe targeted toward, you know, a broader range.
Well, let's look a little bit older. And Jen, I want you to jump in here as well. If I was 13 or 14 and watching this show, and at 14, I certainly considered myself too old for cartoons, but would appreciate an animated feature once in a while that I felt did skew older. If this was on when I was 14, I think I definitely would have watched The Clone Wars week after week and felt it was much in my age range. And I think even at that age, if an episode like this came on, I'd be mad and think this is for kiddies. And this is the type of stuff I watched on Saturday mornings when I was 6. Because here we have, I said 7 characters. I was counting Ahsoka in that. But you've got 6 all new Jedi that are completely one-dimensional characters that represent a trait of a human being. And this is a very old and very basic children's storytelling mechanism. Let's kind of flip the question, and instead of saying, are the other episodes appropriate for someone who would watch this, but now, for someone who's very fine with the other episodes, can they get on board with this if they're not us adults who are a bit more open to a out-of-chronology, anthology-type storytelling that just varies drastically from week to week?
Well, speaking of 13-year-olds, like I've been teaching since August, and I teach 8th grade, so they're all 12, 13, a couple of them are 14, and none of them watch this show, like none of them. I have like a couple action figures on my desk at school, and I've had kids asking me who they are because they don't know, like they just don't care. So I don't know if that's just I'm in a weird district, but really, they're all playing Call of Duty, they're playing Minecraft, like they're not watching TV, and they're not watching this series at all. I don't know if maybe it was over their heads when it first came out, and now they've just never gotten involved, or a lot of them, I've noticed, don't like any cartoons, quote-unquote, and they just think it's all kiddie, and I don't even think they give it a chance. And I was really surprised, because I figured this would be the perfect, like the target audience, and they don't watch it.
I would think that the typical Clone Wars viewer would turn this off. Let's say the 10 to 12-year-old that, you know, enjoys the Clone Wars, maybe enjoys some of the violence, the intensity, this would be such a shift downward, it would turn them off. And, I mean, as we all said when we talked about this initially, this feels different than anything we've gotten from Clone Wars before. It is somewhat of a disconnect. I'm okay with this, but I could see how a lot of people wouldn't be.
So let's go through the story. What we have is the opening crawl talking about young Jedi coming in, and we actually get to see Ahsoka as a very young child and Plo Koon, and we all know that they have that history together. He took her to the Jedi Temple, and describing how younglings are needed in this time of war. It's kind of a dark opening to what's going to be a very fluffy episode, kind of harkened back to like the Hitler Youth when they were running out of adult soldiers and just had to start bringing in the boys. That's kind of how I felt this was setting up of, well, all the adult Jedi are dying. Let's bring in some kids and get them to fight.
That has to be what's going on, because the way that these young Jedi act are not the typical way that I understood that young Padawans should act. It's almost like they should have been through these emotions. They should have been able to train and get through these emotions of fear and trust and all that before they make their lightsaber, right? But because you have this war, because you have all these Jedis dying out there, now you're having war Padawans, and you don't have time to do complete training. And in that, you're getting these Padawans who are not, they don't believe in themselves as much as I think Obi-Wan Kenobi did, or Yoda did, or Mace Windu did when they were Padawans. You have these Padawans who have a lot of fear. It's almost like Yoda's in this episode teaching them, and it's almost like they're not at the point where they're ready to go get their Jedi lightsaber crystals. And they're almost, they're forced to have to push these Padawans to grow up a little faster than normal.
That's kind of like an overriding theme in the Clone Wars in a lot of different areas. I mean, there's been a lot in the expanded universe about how after Geonosis, so many Padawans needed to be elevated to knights that maybe weren't ready, including Anakin. And as a result, a lot of, you know, younglings are elevated to Padawan status again a little too soon, which, if you want to look at it, could be part of Palpatine's ultimate plan. The best way to thin out the ranks is have them put in situations that the Jedi aren't ready for.
That said, I mean, that's just what I got off this opening crawl, and I think it's the single most serious moment of the whole thing, because when you look at what you were saying, Barrett, my feeling isn't that these kids were forced into this to grow up too soon, but really what we have here is a rite of passage during which they will grow up. And I mean, isn't the whole thing kind of very Wizard of Oz on a larger scale? Only instead of the Tin Man, the Straw Man, and the Cowardly Lion, now you have an egotistical human, a impatient Wookiee, a scared Ithorian, and so on. Each one has this character trait, which is basically a character flaw. And instead of the great and powerful Oz showing them that they had it in them all along, what you have is Yoda making them prove to themselves they had it in them all along when they go into the caves and have to learn to overcome that thing that's holding them back.
No, I mean, it's a very old storytelling trope there. But again, it fits. I don't know why it works.
What you have here is Yoda acting like a jerk. Which was pretty funny because everybody knows, it's well known that Yoda was the biggest jerk in episode 5. I mean, all he did was ridicule and make fun of Luke Skywalker. And when we see Yoda in the prequels, you know, he kind of chides Obi-Wan, lost a planet, have you? You know, but he's not mean. Here, I'm seeing a little bit of the meanness come out where he is kind of mean to the Padawans. Did anybody else get that? I mean, he kind of lies to him. He laughs at Petro when Petro brings out a crystal that turns into ice. He laughs at him. He lies to the Padawan. So it's kind of like the Yoda that I know, but he's kind of a jerk.
He was kind of a jerk in episode 1 also, though, just to be fair to Yoda. He was not nice to either Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon, or Anakin.
I like this Yoda, though. Like, I appreciate him going back to, like, kind of a little bit hinting at Empire Strikes Back Yoda, because he's fun. I like him when he's kind of a jerk, because you can tell he takes delight in watching these Padawans grow and learn and take something away from these lessons, but he's also really mischievous, so he likes to kind of tweak them with them a little bit. Like, he likes to mess with them. And in a way, it works better because they make these realizations on their own and they're not just being told. So I think it's a method of his, but I think he gets a kick out of it. And I like that so much better than craggy, cranky, old, you know, really grumpy and unfriendly Yoda of the prequel trilogy.
Jen, you work in a school. I mean, kind of taking this alternative approach to instruction, you know that this is what's going to stick with a child rather than just kind of lecturing at them.
Right. You have to, it's constructivism, as you make them figure it out themselves, as opposed to just telling them. So, I mean, if they want to do rote memorization, they can, but it doesn't internalize as much if they don't make the connection themselves.
And that said, I don't necessarily see Yoda as being a jerk. I mean, when I first saw this episode at Celebration, and again when I watched it this past weekend, what I see here is that standard storytelling method of needing to face your fear, much like Luke had to go into the cave. You have to face your fear to come out the other side. And like Jonathan said, I mean, this is a storytelling trope that goes back to ancient myths that predate modern religion. It's a very human story. But I did find myself appreciating the deft way that it tells it, where I never felt like it was talking down to a child. I felt like it was just at the right level and striking the right balance between being fun and being educational. Where at the end of the episode, yeah, there's a moral, far more than most of these episodes really have had with their opening fortune cookie. And it's very appropriate for that much younger child, but it never felt preachy during the episode itself, in my opinion. Do you guys agree with that?
You know, Arnie, I think you just hit a point right there that clarified why I felt that this episode was so different. Because in other episodes of the Clone Wars, there is no lesson. And in this episode, there is a lesson. It kind of goes back to the old school cartoons. You know, we're saying that this is more geared for children. And I think it is, because we learned a lesson. We learned several lessons at the end of this show. And if this is the way that the Clone Wars is going to go, I can see how it's going to skew towards the children, because I did learn a lesson and I like it.
I didn't think it was bad. I just felt like it was, just because it's a trope that's been used so many times, I feel like it was really predictable, and that made me kind of check out a little bit. But maybe if a kid who hasn't seen this kind of thing over and over again like we have, they might really feel like they're taking something away from it. But like, I feel like this is a really tried, really overused almost trope, where you have these several people, they go through an event and they all take away some new knowledge about a character flaw that they had to overcome. And I didn't dislike the show because of it, but it was really easy to figure out exactly what was going on, like within the first, for me at least, the first couple minutes of them being in the caves.
And Jed, I'm going to back you up on that. I had the exact same thing when I was watching this at Celebration. So yes, as an adult viewer, I think this is a show that we would not probably be drawn back to again and again if it didn't have the Star Wars opening theme at the top of it. But I was able to remove myself as a regular viewer, because the story couldn't draw me in, and instead analyze it, I guess, as a writer, and see how the writers handled telling a story this basic and this common that we've seen so many times. Because when we saw it, Jen, we were both much younger. You're far younger than I am anyway. So I saw this in the 80s. You probably saw this in the 90s. And now this is being told again for the millennials, or even the generation after millennials, who are seeing it for the first time in their cartoon.
Oh, definitely. And I think the writers did a good job with it. And I don't want to criticize them. It's just that I think because we are experienced, it was difficult for me to fully engage with the episode, just because it is so tried and true. But I thought they did a good job. Like, it wasn't clunky. Like, you see some of them and it's painful almost. And this was, they did a good job.
I think maybe the disconnect there is because we had such a little time with these six characters that their character flaw really was the only defining character trait about them.
No doubt, Jonathan. And that was something that I really look forward to exploring the rest of these episodes with you guys, because when this first arc ended for me, my initial thought was, are they going to learn the same lessons week after week after week? I was taken back to one of my childhood favorite cartoons. And Jen, you're probably too young for this, but maybe Barrett and Jonathan remember Dungeons and Dragons, the Star Wars ripoff cartoon that even had a very Yoda-like dungeon master who would come out and speak in riddles.
Oh, yeah.
And basically every week they had to learn the same kind of thing, and the unicorn uni would run off into too much trouble, and what's his name, the guy with the shield, would be too cowardly and have to overcome it every week. But as a kid, I loved it. But I was really wondering, especially as they start to roll the second episode, am I going to have to see them learn these lessons again?
Well, hopefully we won't, but you know, and we'll have to find out.
No spoilers for the listeners. Now, one thing that really shocked me in a very good way about this episode was the way it referenced and reused the EU. I mean, you have a bunch of Jedi going for their crystals, and where do they go but Ilum, which is a planet I know from the Gennady Tartakovsky Clone Wars series, where you have Barriss Sophie and Luminara Unduli building their lightsabers, but actually goes way further back than that to the back matter of the old Dark Empire comics. And here's a case of them doing kind of what I thought they should have done from the beginning, incorporating EU in a way that makes sense. Although there were some differences, like in that Gennady Tartakovsky one, crystals are everywhere and there's blue and green absolutely everywhere. And every once in a while, a purple one will show up just to reference Mace Windu's being the most rare. And here, they went a bit of a different way. There weren't crystals absolutely everywhere. Maybe it's a different part of the planet, but they had to really hunt for them, and they weren't quite as colorful in the cave.
One interesting point that I think was introduced here for the first time is that the crystals chose a color when the Force user found them, and some of them turned blue, and some of them turned green. Now, this is kind of an interesting throwback because the way I recall reading some of the original concept material for episode 3, Anakin's saber was originally planned to turn red when he turned to the dark side, but then they changed that later into he built an additional saber.
Actually, to clarify that, that was a fan rumor, and it was one that I held myself, that the saber would change color, and the color represented the Force user. And, you know, I saw that because we saw Obi-Wan and his was blue, and we'd see Luke in Return of the Jedi when he's kind of on the line and it's green. And so I always wondered if that was the case. George Lucas came out specifically and said, and the direct quote is, "Lightsabers are not mood rings." So Lucas never intended that to be the case, but now here we have it where it kind of is a mood ring.
Well, I know that I read it somewhere. I didn't think it was fan material, but I don't have the source in front of me, so I shouldn't really be quoting it. But I know Hasbro certainly thought that with one of their sabers for Revenge of the Sith.
And that actually came out beforehand, which was, again, something that it came out between 2 and 3, which is what, again, started shaping my mind. And God only knows, hey, how many movies is Lucas making? And now it's back up to 9, 12, 18, but he likes revisionist history, but during that time, his oft-quoted line was, "They're not a mood ring." But hey, listeners, if you guys know of some place where Lucas did say they were changing, and it wasn't just Fancroft, come to the forums and let me know. Then again, I would also like to point out something else Lucas said, no more Wookiee Jedi, and he was adamant that Wookiees were not going to be Jedi. Lobaka was already in the EU. Lobaka got downplayed after Lucas kind of came out and said, no Wookiee Jedi. But here in this episode, we have mood ring lightsaber crystals and a Wookiee Jedi.
I'm glad you brought up the Wookiee Jedi, because that was like the first thing I thought of as soon as we saw the episode. It was just like, I feel lied to, Lucas. Like, I thought you said we weren't going to do this. And then immediately there's this Wookiee Jedi. He was cute. He seemed to be the favorite of a lot of people. But it's kind of frustrating almost, because you get set into a method of thought. And you're like, okay, these are the new rules of the universe. The maker, so to speak, has deemed this so. And then he turns around. It's like, oh, but not for here. And it's confusing.
It forces me to wonder exactly how involved Lucas really is with the creation and the development of Clone Wars. I know Filoni has said that he runs everything by Lucas, but maybe not everything, because there's an episode, as we've said, that have two story elements that contradict what's been said previously. One question I had about the lightsaber crystals is, do the Jedi have to go through this ritual every time they need another crystal? Because, I mean, how many lightsabers have Anakin and Obi-Wan gone through?
You've got to think there's a stash, right? I mean, this is a coming-of-age thing. much like the ritual of building your first lightsaber. But it's notice in Attack of the Clones, Obi-Wan and Anakin lost their lightsaber. Nobody went, here are some parts, have fun. They said, here's a saber.
But if Crystal imbues the force of the, you know, the user, the one who finds it, every time they need to build another saber or build a replacement saber or, you know, a shorter saber, do they need to go back? Because nobody else can pick a Crystal for you.
That's a good question, Jonathan, because we just got that deleted scene of Luke building his lightsaber in the cave on Tatooine. Did he take a side trip to Ilum to get a crystal before he went to go save Han?
I have the EU answer to that.
Everything I've read is that Obi-Wan had it in his hut.
In Shadows of the Empire, he created it. It wasn't a natural crystal. It was fabricated in an oven in Obi-Wan's hovel in Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah.
Talking about blowing my mind. And just when I'm wrapping my mind around something, now we get this, now we get that. It's all over the map with these Jedi crystals.
And what I had read was that the reason Sith crystals were red is because they were artificial. And if Luke was made an artificial one, yeah, I think there's some retconning in need here.
Another interesting component to this episode is the new design Jedi cruiser that takes the younglings and Ahsoka to Ilum. It is a new design. We haven't seen it before. It's called a Jedi Cruiser, and the name of this cruiser is the Crucible, which I find interesting because that is also the name of the training ground that the Emperor's Royal Guards use in Crimson Empire. So I don't know if it was intentional or it was just, you know, happenstance, but I think it's an interesting connection.
It's also the name of Troy Denning's next novel. Is it all a conspiracy, or is it just a term?
It could be a term, but
it could be a conspiracy. I'm not ruling it out. Troy Denning knows his EU.
You know, they're both training. It's both something that you have to get through. A crucible is something you have to get past and overcome. It's a little deep for younglings finding lightsaber crystals.
But actually, in a way, this is a crucible. I usually think of crucibles as being something really hard to overcome, like a hostile-type horror movie situation. Maybe Hellraiser, but in a way, this is, I guess if you're six, this is a crucible. They had to overcome their fears and come to terms with their own weaknesses. As far as the plot itself goes, I think we're kind of talking around it and talking into some minutiae as well as overarching themes, because as we've said, the plot itself of each of these Jedi finding a specific crystal and having a challenge to overcome that is specific to their own fear and weakness. There's not a whole lot to say there. It is what it is. And Jen, you said you were taken out of it because of the simplicity. And I guess I'm with you. I was taken out of it because I began analyzing very closely such details as pacing and each of the characters and figuring out what would happen to make them overcome and trying to figure out very early on, since some had apparent weaknesses, what are the others' weaknesses? The only thing that I didn't like the entire episode, and I thought it was a real cheat, and this may be what you were referring to, Barrett, when you said Yoda's being mean, is that they said that once you're trapped in this cave, then you can't get out. And they trap Petro in the cave, and then he just breaks right through, and Yoda's like, yeah, just ice. You can break out. I thought that was kind of a cheat. I think something in regards to maybe the team coming together, since Yoda gives them the words that they can rely on each other, and that maybe teamwork should have broken him out, not just, oh yeah, by the way, it's ice, let's go.
Another example of how the teachings of the Jedi can confuse you and turn you to the dark side. And I can understand now how Anakin can feel like he's being portrayed in the prequels, because you have these Jedi who are consistently teaching you with lies and Mr. X and certain points of view. You know, I mean, Yoda says to Luke on Dagobah, you don't need your weapons. You only bring with you what you take in. You know, he was being honest with him. Here, you have Yoda have almost a bold, straight lie. I mean, anybody who would have heard that instruction from Yoda would have thought, if I don't get out by the time the door closes, I'm going to be trapped in here. And they even talk about it. They say, well, when's the sunrise next time? 19 days. You know, so it reinforces that they could be trapped in there for 19 days. But more important, because of the lack of the plot, I started making stories up in my head, like, which one of these guys are going to turn to the dark side? raise your hand. I know listeners can't see our hands raised, but how many of you thought Petro was going to go to the dark side for being on his own and leaving the group and all that stuff like that? I thought there was going to be some sort of dark side twist. Nope.
Not in this episode. No way. I mean, I'm back to the young reader junior Jedi Knight novels that I read so many years ago. No, I did not see that happening.
I thought they would plant the seed of that. Because when you have these Padawans and stuff who are full of fear, full of mistrust, that's the seed of the dark side. So I thought we would see more of that.
Now, I have to, at this point, share what my six-year-old interpreted that as. Because my eight-year-old did say, hey, wait a minute, Yoda said they wouldn't be able to get out. And my six-year-old goes, it had just frozen. It hadn't gone all the way. And if he had waited any longer, he wouldn't have been able to get out. So that's how a six-year-old interpreted it.
And Jonathan, speaking of your kids, we're playing a little bit of nepotism. Since this is a very youth-oriented arc, we want to hear the opinions of very young viewers for these voicemails for this episode. So instead of the usual rogues gallery of scoundrels who call in, we want to know if there's a youngling in your life who watches the Clone Wars with you, or if you're a youngling listening right now and you get your parents' permission for a long distance phone call. We want you to leave your voicemails about these Young Jedi episodes at 415-508-JEDI. And since this is the first week, we looked to Jonathan and Barrett, who do watch these episodes with their kids, to get their unfiltered viewpoints. Neither of you coached your kids, right?
No. I only helped them structure it.
And to answer your question, no, I did not coach, but I did help organize his thoughts. And what we did was, as we watched the episode, I would ask him certain questions. You know, how did you like this? What did you think about that? What was your favorite? And as he gave his answers, I just quickly jotted notes and then reminded him, well, this is what you thought, and go ahead and call in.
Right.
So, Jonathan, we'll start with a voicemail from your son, Jonah.
Hi, my name is Jonah, and I just wanted to talk about the new Clone Wars episode, The Gathering. I love this episode because it was fun to see the new Padawans and interesting to see how they found their crystals. The Padawan I really liked was the Wookiee Gungeon because he was the first Wookiee Jedi we have ever seen. It was funny because he got to go ice cream for his crystal. Another thing I like about this episode is when they got into the Crystal Temple. It was fun to see them use the Force to bring down the icebox. It's just like, don't break the ice. I really like this balance, and I can't wait to see them use their crystals to make lightsabers next week.
Don't break the ice. Is that like a really young version of spin the bottle?
God, I hope not.
Like when you don't like girls, don't break the ice.
Gosh, I hope so.
Well, thanks for calling, Jonah. Seems like that was right up his alley at age 8.
No, he really enjoyed the episode. And he was eager to see, he is eager to see how it's going to play out. And he really wants to see the younglings build their lightsabers.
Next up, we have Baron's son, Pharaoh.
Hello, this is Pharaoh, Master Zanite. I am calling in with my thoughts about the Clone Wars episode, The Gathering. I really think the snowy planet, it was a cool place to keep the Jedi Knight lightsaber crystals on. All the young Jedi had jackets on, except for Gungi, because he had fur. I like the way Ahsoka used the Force at the young Jedi to break the ice for the opening door to the palace. When they broke the ice and the ice fell down, that was cool. Gungi the Wookiee, Ganoti the Rodian, Petro the Human, Biff the Hammerhead, Katooni and Zat were all cool young Jedi to be introduced to. The lessons of hope, trust, confidence, courage, selflessness, and patience were good lessons you can learn at and use at school in the park and stuff. My favorite young Jedi was Gungi the Wookiee. He learned patience, and patience is the true lessons of the Jedi. Because they can meditate to find the answer to any problem. And that's how a real Padawan is supposed to act. So, I really like The Gathering, and I can't wait to see them build their new lightsabers in the next new episode. I wish I could build a lightsaber for me so I can slay goblins and stuff. This is Master Zanite, and I'll call in next week's I'll call in with my thoughts on next week's episode. Peace off.
Master Zanite, as my son likes to call himself, was a surprise to me, but it seemed like he had some of the same likings that Jonah had. He loved Gungi the Wookiee, Padawan. He loved the way they used the Force to bring down the ice wall. And he also liked the lessons that were being taught. That was something that we discussed earlier in this episode about, you know, the lessons, and maybe they're going to get around to teaching us a lesson at the end of the show. And as well as Jonah, he wants to see those lightsabers being built. So I think that Filoni and the Clone Wars have something on their hands here. The kids seem to like it.
Which kind of goes back to my original point about inconsistency. I mean, this would be great if this was an entire series aimed at them, or even just a direct-to-DVD one-off, all these things that we speculated this could be. But being in the middle of what appears to be an intense season is odd placement, and I do hope that it doesn't alienate the older child audience who may not be as sophisticated as to know, okay, this is just this arc, and next time we're going to get back to some bloody deaths.
I really think that they're using the opportunity that they have of having this time slot to sort of use it as a test bed. I can't see them, you know, mixing in episodes like this, you know, beyond this arc. I think really this is sort of the trial run for possibly a second series.
And finally, Jonathan, we have your daughter, Isabel.
Hi, my name is Isabel, and I called to talk about the new Clone Wars episode, The Gathering. I haven't been watching the series much since the first season, but my dad thought I would like this episode because it deals with younglings becoming Padawans. He was right. I enjoyed the episode a lot, but I think some parts could have been better. First of all, I think they could have explained that Gungi the Wookiee needs to learn patience better, because it wasn't clear to me that he wasn't patient. One of the other younglings tells him that, but we never really see it. One thing I liked about this episode was that the characters were about my age, so I saw things about myself and others I know in the younglings. The character of Petro reminded me of some of the boys in my grade. Petro had an attitude and came across kinda selfish, but in the end he came through for his friends, so it gives me hope for the boys I know. Even though it could have been explained better, I enjoyed how each character needed to conquer their weakness in order to get their crystals. This reminded me of how in The Empire Strikes Back, Yoda challenged Luke to conquer his fear. My dad was right. I did like this episode, and I'm looking forward to watching the rest of the arc. I hope we get to see more of the Padawan's growth. Bye!
Isabel, you know, after the first season, she didn't really watch this much with me and her brothers, occasionally picking up one here or there. But she did enjoy this episode, and she did want to know if the other episodes that she'd missed were kind of like this, or if they were, you know, a little bit more battle oriented. And I said that, you know, pretty much more battle oriented. And she goes, well, I think I like both. So she's actually looking forward to seeing the rest of the arc as well.
Well, very nice. Well, thank you all. And I hope that your kids can weigh in again next time. And again, to our listeners, we'd love to hear the thoughts of those 10 and under with this arc, at least the next couple episodes of it, at 415-508-JEDI. Call any time from after the episode airs till the next day at noon. And now, I'm not going to spoil anything, but just to set an expectation, anyone who listened to our Celebration 6 coverage knows this already, I will say that this is the singular most kiddie episode of the entire arc, and it's the only one that stands alone. We are about to go into another tightly woven 3-episode arc where I feel that the writers and directors go a little bit back more into their comfort zone and the types of episodes we're used to seeing, or at least splitting the difference between the harsher episodes and this toddler-oriented episode. So I'm very interested to know also, Jonathan and Barrett, how your children adapt to this maturation of the arc in such a short time. It's not like Harry Potter, where the kids grew up with the books, and as the books got more sophisticated, the kids got older. This is 4 weeks.
I'm interested to see how they make the transition myself.
I think it could easily get ramped up a bit, since the tone of the show otherwise has been darker and more violent and things like that. So I don't think it would be a big jump to ramp up from such a kind of kid-oriented starting point.
Oh, it's going to ramp up. I mean, their teacher, their guardian, Ahsoka, has lopped off some heads. So it's going to ramp up. And I kind of I'm spoiler-free from the C6 coverage, so I'm kind of interested to see where it goes.
All right, well, Jonathan, Jen, Barrett, thank you for joining me this week. And we'll be back next week with the next episode, A Test of Strength.
Have a good night, everyone.
See you next time.
Master Zanites, Daddy out.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2012, all rights reserved.
When you said that, I just had this visual image of all the Jedi kind of rounding a corner and running into Pinhead, and it just would have gone a completely different direction.
I have such crystals to show you.